This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Last season on Solving JFK, we looked at both sides of many of the hotly disputed questions in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, including eyewitness testimony and evidence that was gathered from the Texas School Book Depository Building, Dealey Plaza, Parkland Hospital, the J.D. Tippit crime scene, the Texas Theater, Bethesda Naval Hospital, and the Dallas police parking garage where Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald. The primary question we asked last season was, did the Warren Report get it right that Oswald acted alone to kill President Kennedy? You can go back to episode 27 of season 1 to hear the ultimate conclusions of the podcast on each issue. The bottom line is that after reviewing the arguments from both Warren Report defenders and critics on the main evidentiary questions, I believe that there are enough problems with the official story to warrant a deeper dive down the rabbit hole. In season 2 of Solving JFK, we'll look at Oswald's life growing up, his time in the Marines, his defection to the Soviet Union, his time in Dallas, New Orleans, and Mexico City. We'll hear from official story defenders and critics about the characters allegedly surrounding Oswald, like Guy Bannister, David Ferry, George de Morenschild, and Ruth Payne. We'll also cover claims of other assassination plots against President Kennedy, Oswald being impersonated, and Oswald having ties to American intelligence agencies. We'll even get around to talking about the infamous backyard photo showing Oswald posing with a rifle and a pistol, and Oswald's alleged assassination attempt on General Walker. But first, before we get into season 2, in September of 2023, there was huge news related to the JFK assassination. So huge that, if true, it could potentially impact what we discussed in season 1. Of course, I'm talking about the new claims of former Secret Service agent Paul Landis. Today on Solving JFK, we'll talk about Landis and his recent recollection of picking up the magic bullet from the back seat of the limo and placing it on President Kennedy's stretcher.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. Paul Landis, who is 88 years old today, was one of the two Secret Service agents who was guarding Jackie Kennedy on the day of the assassination. The other agent was Clint Hill, who's famous for running up from the follow-up car and jumping on the back of the presidential limo. Landis recently released a book called The Final Witness, which chronicles a shocking story that has previously never been told about a key piece of evidence in the JFK assassination. According to Landis's co-author, presidential historian and attorney James Robinault, once the presidential limo reached Parkland Hospital and President Kennedy had been placed on a gurney, quote, Landis saw and did something that he has kept secret for six decades. He claims that he spotted a bullet resting on the top of the back seat. He says he picked it up, put it in his pocket, and brought it into the hospital. Then, upon entering trauma room one, he insists that he placed the bullet on a white cotton blanket on the president's stretcher. This bullet that Landis says he found looked, quote, largely intact and only moderately damaged, its base having been squeezed in. So it sounds like Landis is describing Commission Exhibit 399, also known as the magic bullet, or the single bullet that the Warren Commission says went through Kennedy's body and then entered Governor Connally's back, shattering his ribs and then fracturing his right wrist bone before being implanted into his left thigh. The Warren Report concluded that the nearly pristine bullet in evidence, CE-399, was found on Governor Connally's stretcher. That finding supports the commission's position that the bullet that went through Kennedy ultimately ended up coming out of Connally's leg. But Paul Landis is now saying that the pristine bullet, CE-399, is the one that he picked up and that he got it at the top of the seat behind Kennedy. That would most likely mean that the bullet fell out of Kennedy's back, which is consistent with the FBI's Seibert and O'Neill report, which chronicled the autopsy doctors saying that the back wound was of a short depth. If that's the case, then CE-399 could not possibly have exited from Kennedy's neck and caused Governor Connally's wounds. And if CE-399 came from anywhere other than Governor Connally's body, it is a decisive blow to the single bullet theory, which is the backbone of the Warren Report. Landis goes on to say that he placed this bullet on President Kennedy's stretcher, not Governor Connally's stretcher, because he assumed that the bullet would be found if it was on the same stretcher as Kennedy's body. This would mean that when Daryl Tomlinson found the bullet, he was really finding a bullet from Kennedy's stretcher that was placed there by Landis, not a bullet from Connally's stretcher that fell out of his thigh. Here's Landis talking to NBC News about what he saw after Kennedy was loaded onto the gurney.
I happened to look to the right where Mrs. Kennedy was sitting, and sitting in a pool of blood there, I saw two bright brass bullet fragments. I picked one of them up, looked at it, and it was kind of like the end of my little pinky. It was mushroomed, and I put it back right exactly where I found it. And by then, Mrs. Kennedy was standing up, and I was looking around for other agents. I didn't see anybody, but I saw an intact, fully bullet on the back of the seat where the cushioning met the trunk of the car. And I picked it up and looked at it, and it was the only thing I noticed that was wrong with it were bullet striations. There was no other deformities. I started to put it back. Mrs. Kennedy and Clint were leaving the car, and I made a quick decision. I didn't see anybody to secure the car. People were merging on the car. I did not want this piece of evidence to disappear, and I slipped it into my pocket. We raced through the lobby of the emergency room. On the way out of the car, I noticed Mrs. Kennedy's pillbox hat, her clutch purse, and I picked them up. And then I noticed there was a Zippo cigarette lighter on his street and his seat. It was all covered with blood. As we raced through the lobby of the emergency room, we got to trauma room one. They had to pivot the gurney that the president's body was on and push it into the trauma room. There was a crowd that kind of had joined us doing this. I was pushed right up next to the president's body and standing right next to his feet.
Given that Paul Landis's story is plausible and is a total game changer if true, the question is it true? And why would Landis wait so long to come forward with this information if it is? Now, Landis says that he has a good reason for not talking about this bullet that he found in the back of the limo. He said that he had post-traumatic stress from witnessing the gory scene of the president's murder, and that the event was so traumatic that he wasn't able to look at anything related to the JFK assassination until around 2014, 51 years after it happened. In response to a question about why Landis didn't say anything about the bullet before the release of his book, Landis said this.
Well, nobody asked me, and I never thought about it. I didn't read anything about the assassination. I had nightmares. I buried everything. I refused to read anything about it because I figured I'd been there. I witnessed it. I didn't need to read anything. All the assassination theories and things that were out there, I never took a look at.
Landis said that he learned of CE-399, the pristine bullet, while reading Josiah Thompson's 1967 book, 6 Seconds in Dallas, which was given to Landis as a gift in 2014. Landis says that after reading the book, he immediately contacted the other Secret Service agent who was guarding the First Lady that day, Clint Hill, so that he could let Hill know about his recollection of finding CE-399. Clint Hill, for his part, has serious doubts about Landis's story. Here's Hill talking to NBC News.
Why do you have doubts about his account?
Because if you check all the evidence, statements, things that happened, they don't line up. It doesn't make any sense to me that he's trying to put it on the president's gurney.
Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, but this guy that I know, let's just say, is. So whether you're like me or the guy I know, or you're really into weed, whatever it is, you're about to nerd out big because there's this company called Mood, Mood.com, that's changing the way people buy cannabis. Here's the science, and this is the part I love. The reason different cannabis strains make you feel different ways isn't just about THC, it's also based on other components called terpenes. Terpenes influence how your bud tastes and smells, but they also affect what you feel. So one terpene might make you feel uplifted and energetic, and another one makes you relaxed and sleepy. There are dozens of these. So when you have the right combination of terpenes, you can feel social, focused, creative, aroused, chilled out, or whatever. You just go to mood.com, click Shop by Mood, and that's it. Want to be more social at a party? There's flower for that. Need to focus and get more work done? There's flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and comes in a discreet box. Best of all, everything is backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code JFK. So head to mood.com and get 20% off of your first order with code JFK. You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact that you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. So visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
Hill added that when Landis called him in 2014, Landis didn't say that he put the bullet on Kennedy's stretcher. Hill says that Landis is adding that part of the story now, and that was not originally part of what Landis told him in 2014.
He found a bullet, almost completely intact, which he picked up, and he put it in his pocket, and he says he brought it into the emergency room and dropped it off on a gurney in the hallway.
About a week after the assassination, Paul Landis provided his written description of what he saw on November 22, 1963, to the Warren Commission. But Landis was never interviewed by the commission. Landis never mentioned anything about bullet fragments or a bullet in his statement to the Warren Commission. Landis had a great opportunity to document finding a bullet or fragments in the back seat when he wrote a detailed 6-page statement 1 week after the assassination. But curiously, all that the statement says about the limo's arrival at Parkland Hospital, the time that Landis now says that he discovered the bullet and the fragments, is this. Quote, "By this time, someone was lifting the president's body out of the right side of the car. Agent Hill helped Mrs. Kennedy out of the car and I followed. Mrs. Kennedy's purse, hat, and cigarette lighter were on the back seat. I picked these three items up as I walked through the car and followed Mrs. Kennedy into the hospital." Landis also says in his original statement that he did not enter the room where President Kennedy was. He stayed by the door. This directly contradicts his recent claims. The allegations of Paul Landis are seriously undermined by the fact that Landis covered so many mundane details in his original written statement, like a purse, a hat, and a cigarette lighter on the back seat. But he failed to mention the headline, which was discovering a bullet and then two fragments, which apparently struck the president. Remember, there was no magic bullet controversy on November 30th, 1963, when Landis wrote this statement. I can't think of a reason for Landis to make such a huge material omission, like not mentioning finding a bullet or a fragment, when he mentions so many other mundane, unimportant issues. But while this November 30th statement is one of the closest to the incident, it's not the only time Landis has been on the record about what he saw during the assassination. Despite Landis's claims that he didn't think about the assassination until 2014, he has been interviewed several times about the assassination over the years. In 1983, Landis did mention a bullet fragment on the back seat in an interview with the Associated Press for the 20th anniversary of President Kennedy's death. In that AP article, it says, quote, "When Landis got to the Kennedy limousine outside the hospital, the president had already been taken inside, but he helped Mrs. Kennedy out. He said there was a bullet fragment on top of the back seat that he picked up and gave to somebody." Now, this sounds like the same placement as the full pristine bullet that Landis now claims he saw behind President Kennedy. And Landis did say in 1983 that he saw fragments. He says that now as well. But now he says that the fragments were on Jackie's seat. He didn't mention anything being on Jackie's seat in 1983. Landis gave an interview again in 2010 for The Kennedy Detail, JFK's Secret Service Agents Break Their Silence by Gerald Blaine and Lisa McCubbin. In that interview, Landis pretty much said the same thing that he told the Associated Press in 1983, that a fragment was found on the back seat of the limo, and that he gave the fragment to someone else, not that he put it on Kennedy's stretcher. Now, Landis's co-author, James Robinault, says that Landis didn't know McCubbin well, and he wasn't sure whether or not he could trust her, so he withheld the truth about what really happened when he was speaking with her. In 2016, Landis gave an interview for the Sixth Floor Museum, where he describes the details of the back seat upon arriving at Parkland, including a reference to the bloody lighter that Landis originally mentioned in his November 30th statement.
What happened once you reached Parkland Hospital?
Limo pulled in, halfback pulled up right behind. I jumped out of the car and I ran to the left side of the president's car. I tried to reach. I reached over and I took Mrs. Kennedy by the shoulder, tried to help her up. She didn't want to move. And finally, Clint walked through with Mrs. Kennedy. And I had stepped into the limo also. And I saw there was a bloody cigarette lighter on the seat, her purse, and a bouquet of roses, and her hat. And I picked up her hat and the lighter. And we left the limo.
How can Landis speak in such detail about the time when he found the bullet and the fragments, but not mention the bullet? More interesting, this interview was in 2016, which is after Landis says he began to learn about the details of the case, and after he says he called Clint Hill to share his recollections. So shouldn't Landis have mentioned the bullet and the fragment in this 2016 interview when he was talking about the list of all the things he found in the back seat? Landis does have a new book that just came out with author James Robinault called The Final Witness. So it's easy to say that he's just out trying to make a quick buck. But that doesn't seem to make any sense to me. Why would Landis ruin his legacy by saying something that he knew wasn't true? And get this, Paul Landis, even after destroying the Warren Commission's explanation of the injuries sustained by President Kennedy and Governor Connally with his story, still thinks that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. His conclusion is primarily based, according to him, on the fact that three shells were discovered on the sixth floor of the school book depository. Remember, we have to explain what bullets caused each of the wounds of President Kennedy and Governor Connally. And if the single bullet theory is not correct, there must be a new theory to explain each of these wounds, especially given the pesky James Tague injury, which takes one of the three bullets off the table. One bullet is the headshot. The last bullet has to account for all of the other injuries. This is why the Paul Landis story is such a big deal. Here's a fun fact. Of all the places in the world, Paul Landis is from Worthington, Ohio, which is where I live and where I'm recording this podcast from at the moment. So I would really like to believe Landis. But I have to be honest. After looking at Landis's prior statements, it's hard to believe that the story is credible, especially the fact that Landis didn't mention the bullet in 2016 when he did the interview with the Sixth Floor Museum. Remember, this was after 2014 when he first became aware of the importance of the bullet from reading Josiah Thompson's book. So I was looking forward to hearing what Paul Landis had to say when I heard him speak at the 60th anniversary conference in Pittsburgh. During that talk, my opinion of whether it's possible that Landis is telling the truth did change a bit. That's because Landis explained that his memory of finding the bullet was not suppressed and then later remembered. Instead, he laid out a scenario where he simply forgot to mention the bullet in the initial written statements, but then he intentionally concealed this information about the bullet over the years, even though he was aware of it. When you look at it this way, Landis coming forward at this late moment in his life with this information that he initially failed to remember the bullet, but then intentionally concealed that information for decades, could be viewed as an admission that's against his interest, which looks a lot more like a confession than it does a last minute, "Oh yeah, by the way, I found a bullet." I was still a little bit confused by all of this, so I stood in line to talk to Paul Landis, and I asked him a quick question to see if we could get some clarity.
How you doing, sir? My name's Matt. I'm from Worthington, Ohio.
Yeah.
Small world.
I grew up in West North Street.
Okay, cool. Did you graduate from Worthington High School?
I graduated from Worthington High School in 53.
Okay.
Then went on to Ohio Wesleyan, and that's cool.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you one quick question, if I could, based on your presentation today. You said in 2014, that's when you came across the Josiah Thompson book, The 6 Seconds to Dallas. You started thinking about coming forward with this information.
Did you find him?
My question is, in 2016, you gave an interview to the 6th Floor Library and didn't mention it. Is that because you were working on a book at that time and planning on putting it out, like, when you had it all together?
I have to redo that history, yeah.
Okay, right on.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, hey, I appreciate your time, and thank you for everything.
Now, my question was definitely a little bit leading, but you've got to remember, there was a line of people behind me. Also, Landis doesn't have great hearing, and I had background noise to compete with, so I knew that I could ask just one question. His answer about having to redo the history that he gave the 6th Floor Museum was certainly interesting. There's one more tidbit of related information that came to light during Landis's presentation at the conference. When he was joined on stage by renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Cyril Wecht, Wecht said that if the bullet Landis describes is real, there's no way that it could have come out of Kennedy's back in the car because it entered on a downward angle. So that bullet would not be Kennedy's back bullet. And Wecht also didn't think that the bullet could have come from a headshot. This really throws a wrench into Landis's story. If there's no way that the bullet could have exited out of Kennedy's back and it couldn't be from a head wound, then how could a pristine bullet that looks a whole lot like CE-399 to Landis have possibly been in the place where Landis says he saw it? I think Paul Landis is a nice man, and he doesn't appear to be lying. Even though I would like to believe him, you won't find me placing any weight on his allegations about finding this bullet. I suppose that it is possible, but there's better evidence to doubt the single bullet theory that is much more reliable than Paul Landis's backseat bullet, starting with the Seibert and O'Neill report. You can learn more about the single bullet theory and the evidence that undermines it in episodes 13 through 15 of season 1. Next time on Solving JFK, we'll take a field trip to Pittsburgh for the 60th anniversary JFK assassination conference and hear from Alec Baldwin, Rob Reiner, and Josiah Thompson, among others. Then we'll turn our attention exclusively to Lee Harvey Oswald. If you heard anything on this episode that lacks context or you think is incorrect, please let us know. You can email solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide a citation and we'll consider it for a future rebuttal episode.
In Dallas, Texas, 3 shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com.